Members of the military know their service can put them in harm's way, but that harm shouldn't come from the government who sent them into conflict. Service members who suffered health effects from the use of chemicals during wartime have had to fight for decades for recognition of their service-related health problems, and the protracted fight over the defoliant Agent Orange during the Vietnam War is just one example. We're discussing lessons learned from the use of military toxins today on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Humanities Forum grants support creative projects that share the stories of Alaska and explore what it means to be Alaskan. Get details and apply at akhf.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Humanities Forum. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Family Education Loan so parents, a spouse, or grandparents can help students with the cost of college or training programs in or outside of Alaska. Interest rates are lower than the Federal Plus, and no credit is required. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Agent Orange, a concoction of chemicals used to knock down heavy vegetation, was used in Vietnam and also for a period of time in the Korean Demilitarized Zone. Depleted uranium was used heavily during the Gulf War. During World War I and II, mustard gas was the threat. What have veterans and the nation learned about these toxins after their use during war? How are veterans that were exposed faring today? We've got two Vietnam veterans here today to discuss it. And we also welcome veterans from other conflicts to join the conversation and share their experiences. Rick Davidge is the past president of the Vietnam Veterans of America State Council and is involved in many other veteran-related groups. Welcome.
Good to be back.
Thanks for being here, Rick. And also, Bill Barty is a Vietnam veteran, a Green Beret, an advocate for peace. Thanks for being here, Bill.
Thank you for having me.
You Alaskans can also join our conversation. We're discussing the health effects of military toxins on the lives of service members. Were you exposed to chemicals during your wartime service? Should the VA compensate veterans? What should that compensation look like? And should the compensation extend to family and future generations? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So you've both been on Talk of Alaska in the past, but let's just start with reminding folks about your own service. Rick, let's start with you. Tell us again what branch and when you served in the military.
Turned 17 in 1963. 2 weeks later, joined the Army. Originally joined the Army as a flight service air traffic control specialist. Unfortunately, I went to school and did all the school things well. And when I went to the 11th Air Assault, which was a new division in the military, specifically put together to test the notion of full air assault capacity, reported to the tower, and the sergeant first class there said, "What are you doing in my tower, kid?" he wouldn't let me work in the tower. And he was right. You needed a little bit more maturity to sit up there. So the command sergeant major for the battalion said, "Well, I've got a slot for a medic. We want to be a medic?" And I said, "Sure." So I became a medic. That's how I ended up being a medic. Not that they didn't confuse the two sometimes, particularly with what we call forward POL deployment. Although I was a medic assigned to the team, I often ended up doing the air traffic control for the ships coming in to refuel, rearm, and et cetera. But I was in Vietnam in 65, 1st Air Cav, 229th Assault Helicopter Battalion, the first American division to go to Vietnam, ordered by President Johnson. built the largest heliport in the world very quickly. And second combat I saw was Hydrang Valley, which is better known as We Were Young and Soldiers with Mel Gibson, the movie. I was not on the ground. I was in the choppers coming in and out, picking up dead and wounded. Second combat was in Pleiku, where I got hit. very lucky, on my 50th birthday, my wife took me back to Vietnam. I was actually able to go to that specific spot. Unique experience. And I've been back a couple of times since then because I became interested in what had happened, particularly with the Mountain Yards. I was interested in the Mountain Yards. We did what we call PR medicine with the Mountain Yards when we would go in. Mountain Yards are part of the Hmong community, and we would call them prehistoric almost. People from the jungle, enormously capable warriors. And so that was my time. I spent 13 months there, got out alive, delighted to be out alive, and spent another 3 years in Korea.
Well, thank you for relaying that information for us so we've got some of the background. Bill Barty, tell us now about your service and where you were and what branch you were in.
My service was 70 through 72, and it was more of at the end of the war, because when Johnson sent Rick's unit in there, it was only going to last for a couple years, and they were going to finish the job. And I ended up, I went in to become a helicopter maintenance specialist with three of us on the buddy system, and we found out in basic training that those promises are out the window, and one ended up air traffic control, one was a door gunner, and I ended up in special forces. I do not consider it a service to this country as much as it was a service to our friends and the people we served with. The country, I think, was completely depleted in the entire war. So I have trouble touting the benefits of the American military overseas right now.
Well, we can talk more about that. If you're just joining us, we are talking today about a wide range of issues related to military service, focusing somewhat on the toxins that people were exposed to during their wartime service. And you can join our conversation if you have similar stories of your own, if you were affected in service by military chemicals that were in use at the time, or if you have other wartime stories and experiences that you'd like to share. You can call us at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to hear from a couple veterans that through KYUK in Bethel, they sent us a couple of remembrances. We'll hear from those two gentlemen later in the program. Were either of you exposed to Agent Orange or other military chemicals during the time that you were in the country that you're aware of? Bill, I see you nodding your head.
Yes, I was. I wasn't aware of what it was, but I was aware that we were in an area that had had some kind of different attention. Everything was white dead trees. This was in the south of Vietnam. Later, as I moved down, they started spraying. It was Operation Ranch Hand, which was began in 74 or 64, I'm sorry, and ended through 71. And that was a rainbow treatment of different colors: Agent Orange, blue, white, green,
purple.
And they began when Rick was there. Now, I don't know whether you were exposed or not, but I think the DMZ was the first use of it. And then later, the entire country, particularly down to the south, up to 33 billion gallons of just Agent Orange primarily. And it wasn't even that it was the combination of DDT and 245T that were both outlawed in this country, but the process that they were using to make them, which speeded up the profit margin for the companies that made it, Dow and Monsanto. So it was the dioxin, which you can keep the dioxin out of those chemicals if you have temperature control. They abandoned the temperature control in order to produce more because it got paid by the amount of production.
By the drum.
And then later when they tried to sue Vietnam and veterans, as we initiated the first suits against Agent Orange, we were told you can't sue the government without their permission. And mm-hmm. they don't give permission unless they know they're going to win. So that started a long, long protracted battle that ended with the attorneys making quite a bit of money. And it did put in place some laws that were later able to expand all the different cancers and effects from Agent Orange and different chemicals. But that's only for American veterans, and we were a small part of those that were hit. 33 million people were victims.
That's an important point, that it wasn't just Americans who were exposed to these toxins and the legacy.
You also had the Korean Rock Army was there in quite a large group. You had troops from Australia. You had a number of other group of troops, plus you had the Vietnamese people mm-hmm. who lived within it. I didn't get, as far as I know, I never was exposed directly to Agent Orange. You're right. In about 65 or 65 when I got there, the first application that I heard of was actually the perimeter around the airbase. They tried a number of other defoliants, but they simply just weren't working as effectively as Orange. And we were told that, you know, don't go out there, but if somebody got wounded or something and came into the tent, you had to service them. But as far as I know, I never had direct exposure to Agent Orange.
I'd correct one thing. I said 33. Sure. It was 3 million. That's the Red Cross estimates of victims in Southeast Asia. 3 million people were
exposed. All right, let's go to the phones for just a moment. Ryan is in Homer. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Did you have a question or a comment?
Well, just a comment. I just kind of wanted to draw a parallel here with the topic being discussed, where what happened with the government during the nuclear testing and the downwinders. I lived in the Southwest and around the New Mexico time. There were impacts that people and communities suffered from in the nuclear testing that the government is paying out on if you have specific types of cancer and condition. So I think the topic, although very different in different time areas, you have some comparisons. Thank you.
Yes, you do.
Thanks,
by the
Ryan.
Way, we have nuclear veterans. We call them nuclear veterans here in Anchorage. Most of them have died. I think I know one that's still alive, struggling. He's one of those poor guys that was said, okay, when we tell you, stand up out of the hole and tell us what you see. And he got the full facial effect. But we do have some nuclear veterans left from those tests in the 50s.
That's an interesting point that Ryan brings up. And, of course, he's talking about the testing of nuclear weapons here on American soil, some of which happened right here in Alaska. Amchitka
yep.
Island is there's still nuclear radioactive material still
right.
on Amchitka Island in test wells out there. Ryan was talking about New Mexico, but yes, that is also another area of exposure to.
Now, one of the things a lot of people don't understand is when you're spraying from a plane, a mist, effectively, that it doesn't just land on plants and the plants die and it goes away. No, Agent Orange had a bad habit of sticking around a long time. Mm. It permeated the groundwater. It permeated the surface water. It got picked up by the wind. And so even though the Department of Defense tried to identify specific areas that were treated, quote unquote, and what service members actually were in those areas and were actually exposed and how long were they there and how much exposure they had, they went through this enormously long process of trying to decide who legitimately was exposed to Agent Orange, as opposed to simply looking at the fact that they were in country, probably affected, and they had a specific problem that was connected with Agent Orange. The other thing is, you know, it's not like the manufacturers didn't know there was going to be a problem. And this was just, this was revealed in some of the investigations that Congress finally did, that there was lots of records in the Department of Defense and with the manufacturers clearly understanding that people who were actively involved in handling these things were probably not going to do too well. But nobody knew that. It was one of those classified things that was classified for 1,000 years until somebody dies, finally got declassified by Congress, and they began to see this evidence.
Mm-hmm. Bill, did you want to?
I was going to say that it's the United States government is more than just complicit in hiding what the corporations knew. They are helping in the profiteering of the war in the long term. We knew from the beginning what the effects of dioxin would be on people, right. And yet we sprayed those millions of gallons not to just defoliate the forest, but fully half of that spray went on to rice crops and right. crops to do away with the Vietnamese being able to feed themselves, including down in the South, which was our allies because they were just, one, mainly they were brown Asian. We didn't have to worry as much about them. The same thing with the Fallujah attacks. The same thing that is going on today with our denial. We're raising Cain about Syria using chemical weapons. They have nowhere near the capability that we have already used against all United Nations conventions. When there were 204 countries signed on against us, we just thumbed our nose at them because that's the power that we have. And that's what we have to change the military control of the world that the U.S. thinks that it is our place as Make America Great Again is to hammer everybody else, and it's backfiring left and right. All we're doing is creating terrorist cell works everywhere.
One of the things that a lot of people don't know too is that sometimes the exposure happened in a different way. Burn pits, particularly during the Gulf War.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And finally, Congress mandated that DOD maintain lists of people who were involved in dealing with burn pits. And so you have a whole nother generation of people who were affected by a variety, many of which were unknown contaminants. One of the other things that's interesting, when I was National Chairman of Government Affairs for VBA, we got involved in quite a thing with Congress on doing some additional research. And in Utah, there was a group that was studying very carefully the effects on particularly Vietnam veterans. And they discovered something that was different, and it still is effective. It still is something that's being discussed. But one of the things that dioxin does is it messes up the sperm, the genetic makeup of the sperm. And so these tests that they were doing in Utah were trying to figure out, you know, when did this happen? How does this happen? In the process of doing that, they also discovered that older men have genetically messed up sperm too. Not all of us, but some of us. And so they began to look at the relationships there.
Between your military service?
Between military service and people who are non-military, who also presented with these problems with particularly birth defects. But out of all of that became the discovery in another study that the effect of Agent Orange is now multi-generational. So it's not just us. Mm-hmm. It's not just our children. It's in many cases even our grandchildren. And getting Congress to respond to that information, and this is continually being studied, mainly by private interest, has been a significant problem because obviously the financial exposure to the Treasury of the United States is rather significant.
Sure.
So they push back on that. But that's something that's happened in the last decade or so, and hopefully that effort will continue to go. But, you know, us old white guys are going away quickly here, and so maybe I'm not kidding you. When you sit and talk to these people, both in the VA and also in DOD, well, you know, another 10 years— numbers change.
And I do want to talk about the longer-term struggles with recognition and this. But First, let me remind listeners that this is Talk of Alaska. We've got two Vietnam veterans in the studio today. We're talking about the legacy of military toxins and how that continues today and started in World War I with mustard gas and continued on through World War II and into the Korean War and the Vietnam War with Agent Orange and during the Gulf Wars, depleted uranium was used and other materials that are known now to be quite toxic for human health. If you have questions or comments about military exposure or military service, give us a call at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. What were the effects of Agent Orange in particular? Immediate? I mean, did people, when service members were, if they walked under an actual spraying event or walked through a recently sprayed vegetated area, were there symptoms that emerged rapidly, or
there
did it
was
take time?
Nausea and some complaints like that, dizziness. But like where we were, the water was coated with it, and we had no warning. That was the worst of it.
Yeah, you didn't know.
It's ongoing today, like Rick was saying about now. They know about long term, generational. It actually changes the chromosome. That children who are mutated third generation can pass on mutations, but there's also still the dioxin that is buried in the sediments all through Southeast Asia, and we also sprayed heavily in Laos and Cambodia. We dumped a tremendous amount there. Besides the unexploded ordnance, which is still going on, 80 million bombs still remain in Laos, which was a primitive mound yard community. We dropped more ordnance there than all of World War II in Europe on a little bunch of mountain yards, basically. So my exposure, I don't know what part of the country I was in when I got it, because I was in it in several times, and I didn't have any effects at all until I got home, and I was 23 and had a complete paralysis stroke. From it only takes one molecule that you ingest to go to the right place to change your life forever.
And 23, you had a stroke.
Yes, and I still have those residual issues. And but I call it a stroke of luck. It turned me from, complacent, want to get away from all of it, to being active, that you have to change it. It's the culture of war we have. Yeah, we're using toxins, we're using poisons, but generally war is not healthy for the planet.
That is an absolute truism. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Leslie is in Wrangell. Hello.
Hello.
Do you have a comment?
I do. First of all, I'd like to, from the bottom of my heart, thank the two vets for their service and everything that they've endured. I personally was not involved in the war. I was born in 63, so, it was... My folks were too old and I was too young. However, through the years, I've witnessed a lot of what I feel is undue prejudice. And I'm wondering if the vets feel that they have been amended, that there's been any kind of compensation, not necessarily by the government, but by our country. Do they feel like we have apologized and recognized them sufficiently? And my generation didn't know much about it. And I'm wondering, whenever I see a man in uniform or a Vietnam vet hat or vest or anything, I make a point to go and thank them for their service. And I wonder if they feel that they've been at all recognized.
All right. Leslie, thank you for the call.
One
Rick?
Of the, in my opinion, one of the most important legacies of the Vietnam Veterans of America was the commitment initially as an organization chartered by Congress, because most of Vietnam veterans were not allowed to join other veterans organizations because we were not considered to be, quote, legitimate war veterans, unquote. Mm-hmm. The lesson, one of the biggest lessons, and this is now into another generation, is we have the saying, never again. Never again will one generation of veterans abandon another. And you talk to Gulf War and to Afghan vets. My son spent 4 years in Iraq. And they'll tell you that they know it's the Vietnam veterans that changed that. And a lot of us nationally in the various chapters and stuff make an issue about finding out when guys and gals are coming home, organizing groups in the community to go at the airport and welcome them home, which is a completely different experience. And it really begins the healing that they need emotionally when they come home.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, yes. In my experiences, yes. I've been very fortunate in some of the things that I've been able to do with my life. So I've had a good feeling about the recognition of my service. I signed the permit for the wall in Washington, D.C. when I was acting Assistant Secretary of Interior. So having an opportunity to participate in that way and in a number of other national and international events that looked at not only Vietnam War, but also Korean War veterans mm-hmm. who were for a long time pretty much forgotten. So, yes.
And I, Bill, I want to get your thoughts, but we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll go right to you to talk about that. But before we go to the break, I want to bring in one of these interviews from our friends at KYUK in Bethel. Thanks for them sending in interviews with two generations of war veterans from the same family. These aren't interviews about military toxins. They're memories of war service. This first one we'll hear from is Elias Venus, who served in the Merchant Marines during World War II in the Pacific. He begins with talking about the Battle of Manila Bay in the Philippines.
Terrific to see just a pile of trash. I was 18 years old when I left here. I'd never been any place, the biggest town I ever was in was Bethel. Well, first thing that comes to my mind is friends that I lost. I had one nephew that I should have served with. He was a master sergeant in the Army, and he was sent home on a C-46 airplane. The plane came down in the Mediterranean, so it's hard to talk about. He was my very best friend. He was my nephew. We were putting her the same age, and I should have been in there doing my part too. I'm sorry I couldn't have helped him. Maybe I could have done something. War is terrible. Any place, anybody's war is terrible. Any fight is terrible. We lost so many, so you guys could be free, and us too, me too.
That was Elias Venus. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with veterans today on the legacy of military toxins and war as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Two veterans in the studio with me today, Rick Davich and Bill Barty. Bill, I wanted to go to you and get your follow-up thoughts.
Well, I think Rick was a medic, and he's inclined to help the wounded. And I think that probably led him into his career with the Vietnam Veterans Association. And And that's a great organization. They've done a lot, but they are still aiding the victims. My favorite organization is actually Veterans for Peace, that I'm a member of, and we have the only chapter in Hanoi. And that's to share and expose the real cost of these wars, that right now the United States is spending more than the next 25 countries combined on military spending. And 24 of them are our allies. Mm. It is strictly a corporate deal, and it doesn't matter whether these toxins go away this time. They have many more in the offing that they're willing to use whenever it's necessary. And the profit margin is simply not worth what we're doing to the world, exporting. Now, President Obama just offered $90 million to help clean up unexploded ordnance in Agent Orange in Vietnam. That is a drop in the bucket to what's needed, and I'm pretty certain President Trump has already rolled that back. Mm. And we're spending trillions. We need to work on treating the wounded everywhere in the world, not just American vets. I appreciate now the way we're accepted, where in the 70s, 60s, Vietnam veterans were not accepted. But it's only part of the whole warrior worship thing that has kind of lifted our boat too, floating them all. And it's not dealing with the problem.
Mm. One of the things point out is, particularly when I'm talking to church groups, and a number of church groups have had me over recently talking about my experience in Vietnam and how it affected me personally. trying to get people to understand that there is a difference between the war and the warrior is a significant thing I think that many of us have learned as a result of Vietnam. The warriors don't choose the wars. The warriors fight the wars based on the decisions made by Congress and the president and others. So when people were getting angry at Vietnam veterans, the anger was misplaced. And I try to point out, one day when I was chairman of the Commission on Military Veterans Affairs for the city, we had someone throw red paint on the statue at the memorial. And we tried to point out that you're defacing the wrong people. You need to look at who decides to go to war as opposed to who stands guard for America. Now, how that is used by the military and by the politicians is not something that we choose.
Which is the point I would like to make about the lady who just called in about thanking for your service. And it's a common sentiment all across the country with people wanting to do something to thank the veterans. However, my contention is that everybody who is alive in America since World War II is a veteran of our wars. Everybody is paying for them, for taxes. We're giving up our education, our schooling, our transportation, our social, our health care, everything. All that money is going into the military-industrial complex. Everybody in the country is a veteran. If you want to thank veterans, call your senator, call your congressperson, and let them know that they are in charge to send armies overseas, not the president and not the military-industrial complex.
And one of the big concerns we have right now is we have fewer people in Congress that have combat experience than
right.
we've had in a very long
yes,
time.
Yeah.
And when you sit and you talk to members of Congress, they have absolutely no appreciation at all of what war is. They really don't. And that's very frustrating for us.
Let's go back to the phones for just a moment. Sam is in Anchorage. Hi, Sam.
Hi. Name's Sam Bundy. I served in 1st Time 12th Marines Bravo Battery in Ramadi 08. I just wanted to thank you, gentlemen, for talking about the casualties of war outside of just us veterans, and, to include the Vietnamese civilian population. And I just wanted to express some support that there are other veterans in my generation as well who have major hang-ups over what we did in the war, considering that all we did in Iraq was provoke hundreds of thousands of people to fight us needlessly, and they died. And then we ended up stabilizing the entire region, causing creating ISIS. you know, I really get tired of people telling me thank you for your service. I didn't do anything for you people. I didn't defend the American way of life. I didn't defend American rights. All I did was contribute to a large problem that killed a lot of people.
And one of the things with the...
Sam, thank you for the call.
Yes, Sam. And one of the things that what I mentioned about Vietnam Veterans for Peace, there's also now a huge membership developing with Iraq Veterans for Peace and Afghan Veterans for Peace, with young people who, much like I was, when you got there and find out you were being lied to and used for profit, that they want to come back and expose that to the American public. It's getting harder and harder to do with the takeover by corporations of all the means of exposure, TV and radio.
Yep. Let's talk for just a moment about the Agent Orange Act. A 2015 article citing some research by ProPublica notes that the claims of Agent Orange exposure the health effects started in 1977. Around that time, Congress passed the Agent Orange Act in 1991, 14 years later. The VA estimates that of 9 million that served in Vietnam, about 2.6 million were potentially exposed. And since 2002, this is a lot of numbers, sorry about that, VA estimates are that 650,000 have been granted benefits from that exposure. What are the benefits? What do veterans who have legitimate health claims because of Agent Orange exposure, what happens? What's the process?
Well, one of the things I do is I run the Veteran Service Officer Program in Alaska for Vietnam Veterans of America, and we're the door, effectively, to help veterans and their families access the services and benefits that they earned through service and sacrifice. Basically, what the benefit is, if you can use that word, is simply a check based on the level of disability. Now, that doesn't mean it's not a good thing to receive, particularly if your disability affects your ability to earn money,
right?
Which is many times the case. In fact, there's quite an active discussion now of people who are functionally unemployable, and Congress is about to do away with that category. we do have people who are 100% disabled who receive a check every month. But then you also have the medical and the mental health benefits, the mental health. And those are sometimes good and sometimes not so good, particularly if you get on a list. But those are really the benefits. The veteran service officer, if anyone out there, by the way, is a member of the family, particularly a spouse, one of the least used benefits are the spouses of past veterans. There is a significant assistance that we can provide to you, both financially and otherwise. And you can find us on the internet, and we'd be more than happy to reach out to you and provide that service. So those are what we get as a result of the thing. But the other thing, which is even more important in my opinion, is what we're talking about. Getting people to listen, getting people to understand a little deeper than the 30-second news bite, what was really going on, not only in Vietnam, but in any of these wars. The concerns that when you're there, you see things that don't make sense to you. And they're only sense to you if somebody's got to be making money doing this, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. So how that relationship between the manufacturers, not only of toxics, but also weapons, and DOD. A lot of people who have worked in DOD have complained and written books and called for significant change in the way contracts are done, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there really has been little done at all.
1-800-478-8255 is the number if you'd like to join our conversation today about military service and exposure to toxins during military service. 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org as one email that we have here today is about a question I wanted to ask next from a gentleman named Fred, who raises the issue of blue water veterans. And I'm sure that you're both nodding, so you're familiar with this term. The reading that I said that I have seen referred to mostly Navy service members, but this gentleman was from an Air Force, former Air Force, and he said that he sent an email that he's sending on to Senator Sullivan asking for support on a Senate bill proposed by an Arkansas senator about blue water veterans. What does this mean? And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Blue Water Veterans Act is something that the Vietnam Veterans of America and many of the other veteran service organizations have been pushing for some time, because we know as a fact that there were an enormous number of other veterans who never put boots on the ground. See, boots on the ground is one of the qualifiers.
That was the criteria
one of the qualifiers for
compensation.
Benefits. Yeah. it was not only Navy, but civilians. Air Force people, Coast Guard people, often involved in moving drums of the stuff, loading it, putting it into the sprayers, or just sitting in one of the guys we worked with sat in a room with a bunch of barrels in it, not knowing what he was sitting in.
And like
and
I said,
he had significant exposure to his lungs.
And one molecule can
and
change
one molecule can take care of everything, yeah.
There's exposure that happened all across the U.S. as well as in the factories with civilians who were working there, and that now, with less and less liability from the corporate structure, that they don't get the health care. The primary, what you asked before, benefit that the veterans are getting is the health care. Most of the time, that translates into treatment for cancers caused by Agent Orange. But there's another whole spectrum, mine with stroke and paralysis and different things. But overall health care, and right now the push by the corporate structure is to privatize the VA, so it'll be more of a profit margin rather. And I say ridiculous that they could think that, but you know, we're moving closer and closer to this. And just like we were lied into the war in Vietnam with the Gulf of Tonkin and Korea and into Iraq with those duplicity, and yet we think we're learning a lesson, but who's one of the top advisors today? Is Henry Kissinger still whispering in the ear of every resident that we need to be this controlling military factor in the world? And we are. We have the most bombs, but we also have the entire world after us now.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones for just a moment. Wayne is in Juneau. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, hello. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, just a couple of anecdotal things related to Agent Orange exposure. I worked with a Native guy from Sitka who ended up with pretty severe cancer all throughout his abdominal cavity, which ultimately killed him. He was probably, 60 years old when he passed away. And also a friend, a guy I met in Wisconsin, who was a son of an Army guy that spent time walking through clouds of Agent Orange in Vietnam. And because of that, he ended up with a pretty severe birth defect on one of his legs and feet. So there is, you know, all that secondary exposure, and I'm sure the people who are living in Vietnam right now are experiencing that to a pretty heavy extent.
Well, thank you, Wayne, for the call. And Bill Barty was talking about that very thing earlier, about the fact that it's not just military American service members who were exposed to these things. Let's hang with the phones for just a moment, and then we'll get comments from our veterans in the studio here. Mike is in Anchorage. Hi, Mike. Mike? Mike must have left. So as you were saying earlier, that this exposure goes much beyond, but I wanted to get back to the blue water veterans for just a moment. Are they part of the settlement or compensation?
No.
Are they getting any help?
Not at this time. The whole effort of the legislation, this is not new legislation. This legislation has been introduced probably many times for over the last decade.
I see. Okay.
We've been able to prove through specific case studies that people were, in fact, exposed, and just because they never put boots on the ground, they were not legitimately within the war area, but they certainly were affected by the war. So I think right now that's our top legislative priority in Congress now, to get that passed.
The Blue Water veterans.
And part of the problem is the numbers. They don't have the numbers of people coming forward to make the claims. So government, it's easier to sweep it under the rug if there's only 1,000 or there's only so many. And what you mentioned about the Agent Orange Act earlier, actually the complaint started in the late 60s.
I see.
And they were completely buried under the, you know, so in the 70s, it wasn't until we began the lawsuits against the government that it, then it forced them into acknowledging that there was even an effect from Agent Orange.
So it wasn't until 77 that they actually publicly acknowledged.
Right. And they knew all along, but it's like everything, you have to catch them in a corner before they'll finally admit they're wrong, whether it's the Me Too campaign or what it is. You have to catch them red-handed before. And that's part of the corruption that's going on right now, where I woke up with a stroke, paralyzed, living in Mountain View, and I went out to the only, no VA here, I went out to Elmendorf. And they studied me for 3 days, and spinal taps, which were experimental then and everything, that had a huge effect for years. And their conclusion was, I must be faking it. Because 23-year-olds don't have strokes.
Oh, you have no idea how many times we've heard that diagnosis.
And right now, today, the last point on Agent Orange is the victims through Friendship Village, where the wife is on the board, dealing with kids in North Vietnam, but all through Vietnam, they are still being born every day. Thousands of kids every year are born with these horrible birth defects, just like Fallujah from depleted uranium. That's still because the poorest people are the ones who are in the mud disturbing these chemicals, and they are going to last for hundreds of years yet because they don't have the financial ability to not dig in the mud.
Now, one of the other things, let me drop one other thing on you. Those people are still being exposed as well because dioxin doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, we've had a series of incidents lately with returned equipment that was deployed in various other parts, and it's eventually come back to the United States, and they're taking it apart, and then these guys are beginning to show symptoms of exposure, and they find out that these aircraft or trucks or whatever were used for the purposes of dispersing Agent Orange. So and how it got permeated into the steel.
Sure.
The steel. And they were exposed by touching that as well. So this is an ongoing thing.
And they still come under Blue Water.
So we are going to take a quick break once again. But before we do that, I want to bring in the second member of the Venus family. Joseph Venus Jr. served in Vietnam. He goes by Sonny. He was born in Bethel, and he was in the service from 67 to 71 and in the reserves until 73. His dad suggested he join the military after high school. He was on the USS Bennington aircraft carrier deployed to Tonkin Gulf, and he worked in radio communications. He says, although there were times he was afraid, he was trained to get over it and get the job done.
I lost lots of classmates and good friends in Vietnam. It's depressing, but as for me being afraid, of course, but it was also an adventure. All the people I've met throughout my service, all great, nice people. They don't want to fight wars. They want to be friends. But in order to preserve our freedom here, we just had to do what you got to do to defend the Constitution of the United States. It probably made me, from being a young punk kid, to being more responsible and more respectable and more grown up. I came home March 17th, 1971. There was a St. Patrick's Day party going on at the VFW. Sompy Elliott was the commander, and he stopped all the music, let everybody not dance and to be quiet, and he got everybody's attention with his deep voice and welcomed me home out of the service, and that made me feel good. And he's the only charter member left right now. But I really treasure those moments, and I wanted to bring it up because in my travels, I've met maybe 6 or 8 World War I veterans, tons of World War II veterans and Korean veterans, and of course Vietnam veterans. And they're all great people. They all did what they had to do. Some of them had to sacrifice the ultimate, and they're not here anymore. But those are treasured moments for me. The Veterans Day is it all brings back good memories that you want to have, and it's great to be free.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the legacy of toxins and military service. Let's go back to the phones for just a moment. Arthur is in Anchorage. Hi, Arthur.
Hi, good morning. Okay, thank you for the opportunity. And I would like to share to everyone out there that we, the Hmong people, we served back in the Vietnam War, and the Agent Orange, or we call the Yellow Ring, has been used for the Hmong after 1975, when the United States pulled over from Laos, and heavily using 2000 to 2004. And so there was two group of journalists that has been sent into Laos to witness the Yellow Ring that affecting the Hmong people in the jungle who resist against the communists. And then there was a BBC News and from journalists and a group of Canadian journalists have been sent to Laos and witnessed. They have a video. They bring the video back to the United States, and they produce that video and call the name of the video called Hunt Like Animal. There you go, hunt like animal on the Hmong in the jungle in Laos. And so they're able to obtain the Agent Orange back to the United States. And so now we, the Hmong people, we still have a large Hmong people who still resist against the communists because, you know, they were tortured. The Hmongs say we are the hunting dog, the running dog for the CIA. And now the third generation still be affecting that by that name. And so the Agent Orange has been dropped in the Hmong territory in the jungle. And like today, still exposure due to the book effect to the Hmong people who back in the jungle born with handicap, you know, with blind, you know, all you name it. And so I just want to share with all the listeners out there that we, the Hmong people, were affecting with this Agent Orange very much the same as the other. And if anybody wanted to go, just, you know, Google and say hunt like animals. So that would be, they have a witness, you know, from the BBC News and from the Canadian who've been sent it to Laos to witness that Agent Orange affecting the Hmong people.
All right. Arthur, thank you so much for the call. And we'll try to find that and link on our website to the film that he was discussing, as well as I wanted to mention that we'll put some links to the websites that you were referencing earlier to Rick, so that if veterans want to reach out to a veteran service officer, they can find it through our website, alaskapublic.org. We'll get those up after the show and once we post the audio. I want to get some closing thoughts here. We only have a couple of minutes left, and this has been a very heavy and serious conversation. What's the prospect for the future, and what do you want everyone to do, not just service members, but civilians? How can people support this effort by military members if people want to thank military members for their service. What's the best way to do that? Rick, I'll start with you.
Well, remember there's a difference between the warrior and the war and the people that make the choice to go to war. One of the things I talk about at length in my book is about the problem of our governance keeping war going. I mean, with the capacity that we had in Vietnam, that war could have been over rather quickly. But the politicians, and predominantly these are people who have no combat experience at all, let alone military experience, get involved in all kinds of political discussions and are affected by special interests. And there's no interest in, as a result of their experience, to end the war. And I say very clearly, do not choose to go to war unless the purpose is to win and have a strategy, not just to go over there and calm things down. When you get involved, remember, Vietnam was a civil war. Vietnam was a civil war mm-hmm. between the North and the South. When you get in the middle of that, first you have to choose a side, and then you have to choose what you're going to do. And one of the great angsts that I experienced when I was in Korea is I began to read what was really going on in Vietnam. Is Mr. McNamara, probably the lowest people on the planet, but yes, to get to know what's going on. Dan Sullivan is very open to conversations on these issues. Of course, he's still active as a mm-hmm. Marine. And talk to those guys so they understand if we're going to go to war, we better have a pretty damn good reason, and it must be absolutely clearly in our national defense, and we better go get it done and come home.
Thank you, Rick. Bill, your final thoughts?
I think we've had a pretty good reason for every one of those wars. McNamara's a war in particular, and Dan Sullivan's on board with it. The reason is profit. It was not a civil war. They were halfway of throwing out colonialist powers when we intervened and divided the country in half. Up until that time, Vietnam is one country. They've been at war 1,310 years, throwing one invader after another out. We were just in a long list, and there was more after us. But just the last point, which is kind of skewing off, was there was an article in today's paper, and it's a congressman from Arizona talking about education and how
yes,
that's a very
that.
Good
yeah.
one, and we need college to educate our kids, not the military.
Thank you for that final point. Thanks to my guests, Rick Davich and Bill Barty. Thanks to KYUK for the help, Dave Waldron, our engineer, and Wesley Early on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
In part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Going without health insurance could be financially devastating. Healthcare bills are the leading cause of personal bankruptcy. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is November 1st through December 15th. A household of four with an annual income of less than $123,000 may qualify for federal tax credits to help cover premium costs. Get signed up for health insurance at healthcare.gov today. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.